who have been underprivileged or oppressed. They're usually living in poverty or have experienced some kind of trauma and hardship. And they're often single women who are lacking resources and support. So I kind of saw them as the Hagars of the world. And so just kind of from my experience of seeing these two groups come together and the dynamics between them, I've seen it go kind of two general directions. So one being, it can get really ugly when these groups of people to come together. It's sad. They're all fighting for control, and that just relationship and dynamic is filled with insecurities. And I think in that, it really loses sight of what's in the best interest of the child. But I've also seen it be a really beautiful experience where you can see God's hand in it. And it's just, it's full of empathy and compassion, and both are able to value the role that the other plays in the situation and really recognize that what is best for the child is to have both of these people in their life in one way or another. So I think that Sarah and Hagar is really a story of the former, where it doesn't really quite go as beautifully as it could have. So another just kind of thought that I had while going through this, I felt like with Sarah's story, we just have to address and acknowledge the experience of infertility. While this is experience I have not yet experienced in my own life, I've had a lot of really close and intimate conversations with women who are experiencing infertility. And I think just these are just some kind of insights that I've had from those interactions. I think especially those women who have experienced a level of privilege in their life, that they've gotten to choose where they go to school. They get to choose what they want to be. They get to choose where they'll live. And they've just generally had the resources, knowledge, and opportunities to make things happen in their life. This kind of over time is going to reinforce, like, I get to create and craft my life. But a lot of times, infertility is really the first real big experience in someone's life where you realize, like, my life is not in my control. I don't get to experience or create what I want. Wanting this is not enough. This is beyond me. And I think, I mean, I know for myself personally, that would be my story and experience, where that would be the first thing that feels completely out of my control. And so I think when you're living in that state of having no control, I've seen people do some kind of crazy things to try to get back control. They'll do anything to gain a sense of control. And so I think in this story, it's really easy to paint Sarah out to be kind of the bad guy in this situation. I think we were talking about yesterday, and we're like, she's kind of the B word in this story. Like, she's not a very nice person, and she's it's really easy to blame her and say, oh, she didn't trust God enough, and she was horrible to Hagar, even though she's done exactly what she made Hagar to do. And so I think what I really wanted to step back and think is, rather than really making, although she did some terrible things, making Sarah out to be the horrible person in this story, is trying to have some empathy for Sarah and recognize her desperation in the situation. I think, I mean, she was barren. She failed to do the one thing that a woman in her society was supposed to do. And I think that still kind of resonates with a lot of women today experiencing infertility. I mean, they feel broken a lot of times. And like, I can't do the one thing I'm made to do. And I think just in Sarah's situation, like, on top of that, not just, this is not like run-of-the-mill infertility. This is like, she's supposed to be like helping to father nations. And like, God told her to do this. And she can't make one child. And so I can imagine just the state of desperation that she's in that situation to make her do. You can understand why she did the things that she did in that situation. And so that just kind of leads me to the last little point that I wanted to make, kind of just thinking in some of the broader terms of like patriarchy and feminism, and how does that all play into this story of Sarah and Hagar? And so I think under the umbrella of patriarchy, both Sarah and Hagar were threatened and oppressed by forces in their society that prevented them from flourishing and realizing and becoming their full selves. They had one narrow role in life. And like I was saying, I think that when you're looking at a patriarchal society, it sets up the notion that there's just a small piece of the pie available to women. That it limits their role, their value, and opportunities available to them. And so it leaves the woman to fight for pieces of that sliver of the pie. And so I think Sarah was really keenly aware of her vulnerability as a woman, that she was unable to perform her role. So in her vulnerability, she went to attack the one person that was maybe more vulnerable than her, her slave, the more oppressed person in the situation. And so she, and then kind of on the flip side of that, when Hagar starts to get a little bit of the upper hand, she also gets a little bit catty and starts to fight back. So kind of like looking at the dynamics of how it happened, I feel like we have to wonder, what if the two of them, what if Sarah and Hagar had helped one another to change the rules of the patriarchal society that ran their lives? What if they recognized that they needed each other and that they each had unique gifts to bring to the table? And what if the privileged and the underprivileged came together to create a justice system together? I really think that this could really create an amazing shift in the way that women look at themselves and look at each other and help society view others with more compassion and allowing others to become their full selves within God. And so I think this is even really relevant today. I think in our current climate, the women's movement is trying to have a little bit more of a oomph to it. But I also think that the Sarahs of the world are really quick to recognize their own oppression, but don't always recognize the ways that, I'm going to say we, because I would fit within the Sarah category of the world. We're quick to recognize our own oppression, but don't always recognize the ways in which we continue to contribute to or reinforce the oppression of others in the way, like the Hagars of the world. We betray them sometimes in our efforts to move forward because we want what's going to suit our best interests. And so I think just kind of like stepping back from this and looking at the story, we don't need to be fighting for just a sliver of the pie. I think God is big. God has enough goodness and grace for everyone. And so I think what we really need is to be coming together. If the two sides, the women could come together and create this new reality and this new system that allows everyone to partake in that goodness and grace. And so I think that the story of Sarah and Hagar kind of gives us some of the tools and the ideas to be able to create that new reality. I think one thing that was really interesting, when Hagar runs away to the wilderness, God sends her back to go back to the situation. And I think part of that, just looking at that, like, we need each other, and we need each other to create this new reality, this new system, this new society, and we can't do it in isolation from one another. I also think that kind of looking more at what that time while Hagar was in the wilderness, her interactions with God, I think also point out something important or illuminating. So she's instructed to name her son Ishmael, which is the God that hears. And then she then in turn names God, I'm not going to, El Roy, something, I don't know. But it means the God that sees. And so I thought that was really important, of just, especially the Hagars, the oppressed, the people out in the wilderness, they want to be seen and heard. And I think that is kind of the step forward, especially for the Sarahs in the world, to see and hear others. And so I think when we're doing that, when we're seeing and hearing, we're able to come together to create that a system or society that allows, the goodness and grace is there. Like, that God is giving it and doing it, but I don't think everyone is allowed to access it in the same way always in society. And if we're working together to see and hear others, it allows others to feel the goodness and grace of God here. That's what I got.
Whoa. Let me say a few things. Do you have discussion questions? Because I don't even feel like I need to preach at the moment.
I don't have discussion questions.
Really, really. I mean, that is enough. Anybody else, like, that's enough to chew on.
Jeanette needs to just move over, because
who needs to move over?
Jeanette. I'm glad I have a few more skills than Jeanette.
I don't know if she's
clear. That was... Thank you. Thank you. There's so much to think about. I mean, I'm just like, you said about 15 things in there that I was like, I didn't even think about. You know, I've spent the whole week thinking about this teaching, and I haven't. It was like, you said this and this and this, and I was like, wow, and the Bible says this and this. Okay, wow. Thank you, Molly. Thank you. That was incredible. See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, if I'm going to say stuff, but it's just like, the you ladies kind of know what you're doing, and I'm just like, anyway, here's what I want to do. We'll start here. I want you to start thinking about what you were doing 20 years ago. And that's what I want you to turn to the person next to you. What were you doing 20 years ago? And if you're like, need to get things going, this was me about 20 years ago getting ready for high school prom. Woo! Look at that lettuce up top. Look at that up top. Man, if I could have a hair like that right now. Okay, so go back to this because you guys are going to get distracted. Matt had a shirt off earlier, and then here I am in a tux and all that, you know. What were you doing 20 years ago? Turn to the person next to you and just talk about what you were doing 20 years ago. All right, then on the tail end of that conversation, here's two other things you can talk about too. Maybe share two highlights over the last 20 years, and then two pains, things that were difficult for you over the last 20 years. So what were you doing, and maybe two highlights over the last 20 years, and then two things that were painful. Or you can do 20. If you need to do 20, if it's like 20 years, that's a lot. I can do 20. Over the 20-year span. Now, as we talk about this, one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted us to think in terms of 20 years, because in this story, I just want to talk about the story of Hagar and Sarah, and obviously Abraham plays a big role in the background of this. Now, just a disclaimer, Sarai and Sarah, God changed, her original name is Sarai, and then God changed her name to Sarah. It starts off as Abram, and then God changes his name to Abraham. So if I use any of those four names, I'm just talking about the same two people, Sarai, Sarah, Abram, Abraham. But anyway, I wanted to talk about this 20 years span, because we're, I'm thinking back, geez, that was a long time ago, you know what I mean? And I want us to think in terms of 20 years, because what happens in this narrative that we encounter in the scriptures, it's approximately the span between the promise that God gives to Abram and Sarai, and then it's about 20 years between the original promise and then when Isaac is actually born. Okay, so I want us to think. Now, we're not good at thinking in spans of 20 years. I'm not good about thinking what I'm going to be doing when I'm 56 years old, right? When all my kids in 20 years will be out of the house. but this is the span of time that we're talking about. We had a question last week in fourth groups, would you rather travel to a point in the past or rather travel to a point in the future? And I was thinking, I'd rather travel to the past. The future is kind of has like this, there's some mystique and there's some adventure yet to the future. I don't really know what I'm doing in 20 years. You know, I'll go back to my high school prom and go crush it one more time, but I did not crush my high school prom. You guys can obviously tell that this was not me crushing my high school prom.
You're by yourself.
I was by myself. Just. But I want to think. I want to get us thinking about. So what I want to do is I want to look at this story, and I just want to tell the narrative of Abram, of Sarah. I won't really get much into Hagar. I thought what you brought up about Hagar was just so brilliant, as I've kind of felt what the Lord's been speaking to me to share this morning. It didn't necessarily have that kind of plot with Hagar into it, but I want us to think about this 20 years. And I would just kind of want to share the story, and then I just want to make kind of one large point out of all this. And so if you got a Bible, let's go to page 8. And I just got some, we'll just kind of walk down through it. So if you got one of the Bibles here, it's page 8. Now, the first mention that we get here in verse 29 of this woman named Sarai or Sarah, and this is the first thing that's recorded about her, and this starts in chapter 11, verse 29, and it says that Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. Micah? Anybody want to take a guess at that one? Matt, that could be a name for you guys next go around. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Isaac. Now Sarai, verse 30, was barren. She had no children. Now again, as Molly talked about, this is a big problem because in this culture, not only was it that kind of struggle of infertility, but it was actually seen as a curse from the gods or from God to be barren, not to be able to have children, to be infertile. She is, and you spoke about that, because I just kind of brushed over the infertility aspect of it, and I was like, oh, but I can't imagine the pain of that. We live in a society now where we have all the medicine, and we have all the drugs, and we have all the artificial insemination, and if that doesn't work, we can do this process, and if that process doesn't work, then we got this, and you can more or less, I don't mean to say this kind of flippantly, but you can more or less buy a baby, right? Even if you're infertile, you can more or less. I know people that just like, yeah, we did this. It was like $90,000, and here we are pregnant. You know, so that's the society we live in. We don't live in this when you're barren. But this, to me, is still a very real reality in many parts of the world. I was thinking about, imagine you live in a rural village in Peru, and it's just you are unable to have kids. And you live in this small village, maybe in the northwest corner of Peru, and you're barren to your husband, and how you would experience that. See, again, in the West, here in Southern California, you just go down to this clinic, to that clinic, to this specialist, to that specialist, and we'll get the baby out there for you. But for a lot of people, this is still a big problem, this barrenness, this infertility. And I couldn't imagine this, how you would feel disgraced, you would feel stigmatized, you would feel cursed. But we initially encounter Sarai, we initially encounter her, the first words that are said about her is that she is barren, right? Now, in chapter 12, if you go over to the next page, in chapter 12, God lays out his first promise, and he gives this promise to this man named Abram, or as I could say, Abraham. And we'll start there. I'll just start in verse 6. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Morah at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, we encounter the first problem here, or the first contradiction, which is what? This is a simple one. I know you guys are just being humble right now. How is he going to have a kid? How is God promising him offspring when his wife is barren, right? So we encounter the first promise that God says is, hey, he's traveling, he's left his homeland, he's into this land of Canaan, and he sees this great and wonderful land, and God says, to your offspring, I'm going to give all this land. But again, he has this backstory that, well, what offspring? How is this going to happen? My wife can't have any kids, right? Abram and Sarai travel to Egypt to avoid a famine. This kind of happens in, I think this happens here in chapter 13. The second part of chapter 12. They travel to Egypt to avoid a famine. And one of the things that's fascinating about Sarai is, even though she's barren, in chapter 12 mentions this, she's mentioned as beautiful, right? And she's mentioned as beautiful multiple times in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And one of the studies I found that we all know the Dead Sea Scrolls that were discovered about 60 years ago in those caves in the Negev, in the desert. And they've even found, like, on some of these scrolls, some of these parchments, that even referencing Sarah is beautiful, like how beautiful she is. We talked about this a couple months ago where they did this, I had this great joke lined up about my wife, and it was just going to all make sense, and now she's not even sitting in here, about how my wife was beautiful and all this stuff, but she's in the nursery, so we'll just skip the joke, and we're going to be moving on. But I was, I had this, it was just going to be, and just kind of, yeah. My wife is beautiful, so there she is. So Genesis chapter 13, if you go over to chapter 13, this is still on page 8. One of the things that happened is Abram and his brother Lot, they separate, and in Genesis 13, God once again talks about how all this land is going to be given to his offspring. So God once again comes to Abram, comes to Sarah, and again they're sharing this moment together, and he says, hey, this land is going to be for your offspring. This is going to be, if you go to verse 15 there in chapter 13, so 13, 15. He says, Lord, or go to 14. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring. And then he says this other promise. He uses this great metaphor. He says, I will make your offspring, this is verse 16, I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Isn't that a great metaphor? Imagine somebody sitting around counting dust, right? And God says, that's how many children you have. Now, again, we still have this original problem, is that she's barren, right? But God keeps telling them, you're going to have a baby, you're going to have a baby, offspring. And then go to chapter 15. So skip over a chapter. In chapter 15, God uses a different metaphor, and this is verse 15:5. Let's start in verse 4. Then the word of the Lord came to Abram. This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. So God gives Abram another promise. And again, as I talk about this promise to Abram, I'm assuming that Abram's just not keeping these things personal. It's not just him and God talking. I'm assuming that he's sharing this with his wife, that he's talking about with his wife. No, God spoke to me again. He used this great metaphor about dust. No, this time he uses this great metaphor about all the stars, all the offspring. So there, to me, there's this assumption behind this that they're sharing in this moment and all these promises. You with me? So verse 15, we have God using this metaphor as you're going to have so many descendants, so many offspring, that it's going to be more than all the stars. And in Southern California, we could be like, yeah, that's like, I see like 7 stars up there. That's kind of a lot of kids. But I imagine in the desert, you know, in the ancient Near East, and you look up and you see, we've all been in the wilderness and we've seen stars and stars and stars. And so God says, this is what your descendants will be like. Chapter 16 begins this Hagar-Sarah saga. And let me just read this, because this is, Molly, a lot what you talked about. I just want to read the first 4 verses here. Abraham at this point is about 86 years old, right? So it's kind of getting on with it. God's been making all this promise, descendant, promise, offspring, all this stuff, right? And so at one point, I think Sarah just kind of says, let's just kind of get on with things here. So in verse 16, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Now, one of the most important things to recognize here is her attitude, her affect shifts. Right? It was bad enough in that day. Infertility, I would say, would be devastating. Even more devastating was to believe that God caused it. So now the promises that God has made to them about offspring and descendants and all this stuff, now she's saying, actually, it's the Lord's fault that this has happened to me. She's beginning to believe the curse, that she's cursed, right? And what happens when we get tired of waiting is that we make things happen, don't we? We force the issue, and typically this ends up being a mistake. And so in her case, in Sarah and Hagar's case, it does end up kind of being a mistake. Verse 4, I'm sorry, this is the kind of second. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. And then when she knew she was pregnant, here's where things kind of go sideways. She began to despise her mistress, right? So the relationship just goes sideways. She begins to kind of verbally assault Hagar. Hagar ends up running away into the wilderness. And Molly, as you pointed out, God sends her back. God sends her back to this. In chapter 17, Abram was 86. He's now 99. And so in chapter 17, if you look at a couple verses here, 17, you go to verse 7. Again, God speaking to Abram says, I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now alien, I will give to you as an everlasting possession to you and to your descendants after you, and I will be their God. Also in 17, if you just skip over to verse 17, so 17:17, Abram fell face down. He laughed and he said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abram said to God, if only Ishmael might now live under your blessing. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for him, for his descendants after him. So now God says, not only am I going to give you a son, but here's the son's name, right? So he's 99. Again, God's talking about descendants. God gives his son a name. Again, Sarah will have a son. In chapter 18, you have the three visitors. And this has got all sorts of interesting things going on. But these three visitors come and they say, we're going to come back next time this year and you're going to have a son. And Sarah hears this, right? And she begins laughing at this. And she says this line, if you go to verse 9, in 18, verse 9, they ask, these visitors, they say, hey, where's your wife, Sarah? And they say, she's over there in the tent. There in the tent, he said. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now, Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent, which was behind him. Abram and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? Right? So it's interesting to watch kind of her trajectory to where that begins with the promise. She at some point says, not only is my barrenness kind of my problem, but God has caused this in me. And at this point, she's just laughing at it. Right? Do you ever get to that point where you're just like, seriously, it's a joke at this point, right? Oh, we've been hearing this now for so long. I love this. I was thinking about this verse here. I was just kind of looking at verse 12, and there's this great image that she uses where she says that she's worn out. A couple translations, the ICB says she laughs to herself. My husband and I are too old to have a baby, which is just kind of the whatever version, the bland version. And then the Holman Christian Standard Bible says, she laughed to herself, after I've become shriveled up and my Lord is old. Isn't that great? Isn't that just one of the great lines of the Bible? I'm shriveled up and my Lord is old. Will I have this delight? And this NIV says, she's worn out. And the image that she uses here, the word that she uses, is the word that she would use. And I put just this, it's like for a pair of worn out sandals. It's like this word that she, and we, come on, we're in Southern California, like, to have a pair of worn-out rainbows is like a sign of honor, isn't it, Lil? You know what I mean? And this is the image. She's like, this is who I am. And she's laughing because she's like, I know, I'm just this old pair of sandals, and God's saying that the baby's going to come? Come on, right? Now, in Genesis 21, finally, in Genesis 21, again, we're thinking about 20 years now, right? 20 years. So go over to Genesis 21. We finally get to this moment, the birth of Isaac. And let's read just the first, seven verses here. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. She added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. A wonderful little end. Now, I was thinking about this because one of the things I did this week is I just was like, I was not very familiar with the story of Abram and Sarah and Hagar and all this stuff. So I just kind of, I literally had all these things just sketched out on a piece of paper. And I'm looking at just the kind of the trajectory, in my opinion, of the story, right? And here's how I would summarize what we just talked about. This would be the extended Twitter version. Promise, promise, descendant, offspring, promise, pinky swear, promise, seriously, lots of kids, like all the dust in the world, descendants, lots of kids, as many as the stars in the sky. Oh, here, try our slave girl. Promise, seriously, this time, I promise, promise, trust me, descendant, promise. This time next year, offspring, children, blessed nation, promise. By the way, his name's going to be Isaac. Promise, promise, blessing, descendant, promise, 20 years later, a baby. Is that kind of the good summary of what happens in Genesis 11 through 21? Right? It's as if God spends this whole time saying, I promise you, and you're going to have descendants, and you're going to have offspring, it's going to be like dust, it's going to be like stars, and you're going to have this many babies, you're going to have that many babies, and he keeps making this promise, and I'm looking at the trajectory of all this stuff, and I'm like, God just promises and promises and promises and promises. At one point, they're just laughing at God, right? They're just like, this is a joke. It's just a joke at this point. And I'm thinking about this, and here's what I felt the Lord was putting on my heart. It's like, God made a lot of promises, and how do we wait in the midst of so many unfulfilled promises, right? How many people know what that's like? Now, they're 20 years in, right? Imagine the Lord gave you a promise. Imagine, you know, me in high school prom, the Lord said, hey, Eric, I'm going to make you a pastor of a great church. And I'm like, no, come on, serious, that's just, no, I'm going to do it, right? I'm going to do it. And or, you know, you have to kind of get this time frame of 20 years that God had been promising and promising and promising. And one of the central themes of this narrative is that there is just all these promises and just nothing happens, right? Just nothing happens for Sarai, for Abram. It's just kind of like, here's another promise. Could you imagine by the 40th promise that God, I mean, this is just ones we have recorded. God just promises and promises. Anybody know what it's like? You have promises from the Lord and just like, there's just nothing there. You just wait. You just wait. And I put myself in their shoes for a little bit. And Molly, again, you talked about the infertility and you put yourself in somebody's shoes for that. God would promise you to have a baby, that God would promise you to have a baby, that God would promise you to have a baby. And you know your condition and there's just nothing there. And how difficult, how do we wait in the midst of so many unfulfilled promises? Maybe the Lord's spoken to you, and again, this was, I just feel like as we've been talking and thinking about this at church, maybe the Lord's spoken to you about a job, about children, about relationships, about spiritual, maybe you're just kind of like spiritually wandering, you're discontent. There's a specific, I hope this doesn't sound too negative, but there's a specific character defect, whether it would be anger, whether it be lust, whether it be anxiety, worry, whether it be a specific addiction. Maybe there's a longing in your soul. Maybe there's an anticipation. And you feel like the Lord's given you a word for that, but you've just been waiting. And you have all these promises, and day by day, year by year, decade by decade, just nothing happens. And maybe at this point, you're either thinking like, man, actually the Lord's been the one that's kind of cursed this in me. Maybe you're at this point, you're just kind of laughing at, like, seriously, this is just a joke. God, you've been telling me this, I've been reading in the scripture. And at this point, I'm just, 20 years they had waited, right? 20 years they had waited. And again, I don't know what it is for you, but I just felt like the Lord saying, like, there's people in this church that have just been waiting and waiting, and God's spoken to them, and they're just like, they're ready to give up, right? They're ready to quit. And I know, like, I was thinking about this too, and maybe it's just, I just feel like there's things in this list that I've been waiting for, and it's been years. Like, where I feel like I read scriptures, you know, I read, like, the promises of God, and I'm like, yeah, God, you're going to do this. And then it's just another year goes by, and you're like, you haven't done it, have you? Yeah, God, you're, no, this is the time, this is the one. Nope, not this year. You know, and we wait. And to me, when I read this narrative, when I read this story about Abram and Sarah, it's a long 20 years of waiting. It's a long 20 years of God saying, no, I promise this time. I promise. Remember, descendants, offspring, numerous. Your kids are going to have this land. This is all for you. And they just wait in that. And for us that are sitting in this room, and there's something in your life that you're just waiting on. You're waiting on something to be restored. You're waiting for something that's just, it's just dogged you for years and you just can't get over it. And the Lord's been, ah. I just wanted to, instead of kind of leaving on this melancholy kind of a note, just a little bit of what I would say, I guess maybe just a little bit of hope while you wait. Let me just give four things. I think when we wait, I think one of the things we have to remember is that time does not operate proportionally, right? So here's this random image that I found on the internet of a guy sitting in a doctor's office. Now, we all know that when you go to a doctor's office and you sit in the waiting room and you're there for like 4 minutes, how long does it feel? Huh? It feels like an hour, right? And I was thinking about this, as you're in this season, and if you're in this season of waiting, and you're waiting, and what happens is, when you're waiting, you don't, like, the time just doesn't operate in the same manner. It's like you're in the doctor's office, and you're like, it's only been 2 minutes? It's for like 20 minutes, right? And so you're waiting, whatever you're waiting for, I think sometimes it's just helpful to remember that, like, time just doesn't operate in the way that we normally think it operates. And just, there goes my little girl. Sorry. And what happens is we need to remember that it might only be 2 months, and it's helpful for us just to say, okay, Lord, now this thing that I'm waiting on, this thing that you've spoken to me about, this thing that I've received from you, this thing that I'm trying to overcome, how long really has it been since I've been hearing from you about this? Because again, it might be like that you've been waiting on this thing for 2 years and it feels like 20 years, right? It might be that you've been waiting on this thing for like 6 months, but it's felt like a decade. So I think that as you're waiting on whatever it might be, again, a job or something with your character or whatever it might be, that time is not operating in kind of that rational way, right? Second thing I was thinking about this, and I guess maybe this just hopefully something here sticks for you, is that, here's a good picture. So when my daughter went to, we at one point we had Disneyland passes and we went down that road regretfully. And at this moment in our family's life, and especially in Julia's life, the most important people in the world were right here and right here, right? Were Anna and Elsa. And so when we were in Disneyland to go see Anna and Elsa was like, did you guys ever do it? How long of a wait was that? 20 years. Yeah. Right? You were in line for 20 years waiting to see Anna and Elsa. And as an adult, you're standing in line, and what are you thinking? What am I here for? You're irritable. Your kids are driving you crazy, right? It's a waste of time. It's boring. It's frustrating. You're experiencing all these things as an adult waiting in line just to go see these two silly characters, right? Matt, you're going to get there, but it'll probably be Lightning McQueen and Mater. As a child, what are you thinking?
Can't wait.
Right? Can you imagine? I was thinking about this. I was wondering what my daughter's mindset would have been while she's waiting for this, right? The anticipation, the excitement, the giddiness, the cheerfulness that she had knowing what she was about to step into. See, when we wait, right? When we're in those periods of waiting, we're the adults in the line and we're frustrated and we're tapping our feet and we're saying, this is a waste of time. God, this is boring. I'm miserable. Why don't you do something about that? But I was just thinking, you know, if you're in this waiting season and the Lord's spoken something to you, and maybe you're just saying like, okay, Lord, you're going to do something here, right? And I'm going to be excited in the middle of this. I'm going to be cheerful in the middle of this. I'm going to be carefree. I'm going to anticipate something wonderful that's going to happen in the midst of all this. We can wait as a child in this, knowing that something wonderful is going to happen. G.K. Chesterton would say this, and I've quoted him before in this phrase, but I love how he talks about God in this phrase, and he says, God has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. See, when we think about God, the image that comes up is that grandpa in the sky, and Chesterton kind of flips that imagery, and he says, we're the old ones, we're the ones standing in line, and we're bored, and we're frustrated, and we're irritable, and we're miserable. And there's God standing in line, like a little kid, waiting to go see Anna and Elsa, right? And he's excited, and he's giddy, and he's cheerful. And we're just the old ones, the old grumpy ones in line, right? And maybe we can grow a little younger in that way. The other thing I wanted to say, too, is, and sorry about the Disneyland metaphors here. I don't know where these came from. So, and again, my daughter went this week, so I got to hear all these great stories about her going to Disneyland with her cousin and with her aunt and uncle. And I put this little phrase here, look for Easter eggs. Where's my man Nolan? Is he working this morning? Or is he just all? Nolan is the Easter egg. And not Easter eggs in the sense of the ones that you go hunt for on Easter. In all the films, you know, they have all these little hints, these little clues. One of the great things that Disney does is that in all their lines, they have these little things. You know, everybody know the Hidden Mickeys? You guys know about that? There's like all these little hidden Mickeys around the park. There's all these. You don't know about that, Lou? You're looking at me like.
I haven't been to Disneyland in 22 years.
You're my man. but they have all these little things that, like, as you're in line, they have all these little kind of clues and hints and just kind of these little. They have, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about? All these little things that you can look at or kind of to distract you. And, you know, sometimes we stand in line and we're just bored and we're just frustrated and we're just irritable. And then. In the midst of all that, there's all these little things that are around us, these little Easter eggs, these little hints, these little surprises that Disney was so brilliant in putting in place. And I was thinking, if you're waiting right now, God has put all these little surprises, these little Easter eggs, these little hints, these little miracles all around you that you can see and that you can observe and that you can celebrate, right? Maybe for you, you take your eyes off of whatever, you're standing in line and you're waiting, we're all waiting, right? And for a moment you notice a sunset, right? And you just kind of take that sunset in. We live in Southern California, we live in one of the sunset capitals of the world, come on, right? And you just sit there in that sunset, and Lord, I know that this thing that I'm waiting on, but let me just take my eyes off that, let me just soak in that beauty for a little bit, right? Maybe it's a child laughing. Maybe you just smile at a stranger or a stranger smiles at you. Maybe there's a good cup of coffee. Maybe it's the way that your child says, I love you, to you. Maybe you just kind of, it's just all these miracles of everyday life that we have. And we're waiting, but God says, no, I'm putting all these little Easter eggs all around you for you to enjoy. One of the things that happened to me a couple weeks ago is my wife... been a lot of Disneyland and my wife references. My wife, every night before my little girls go to bed, she sings You Are My Sunshine. So Jeanette has taken it upon herself to sing You Are My Sunshine to Alice. And I was thinking about, again, because in some of the periods of when I wait and when I'm waiting and I'm struggling, when I'm frustrated, and then you just have this moment, right? You just have this moment where the Lord says, hey, take your eyes off that for a little bit. And here's a little miracle right in your midst. So here, without further ado, is the Grammy Award-winning song, You Are My Sunshine, as performed by Miss Jeanette Ann Williams, if I can get it to work. Come on now. No, you're not going to do this to me, are you?
This waiting thing, like, on purpose?
Yeah, this was kind of the...
No. It just pops right up here. Okay. We're going to have to come back to that. What's that?
I'm waiting for the debut.
I know. It looks like it just came in as an image. All right. Jeanette has this great little song. I'll show it. I'll get it for next week. But she has this great little song. She sings "You Are My Sunshine." It's just "You Are My," and then she just says "Good night," and then she just slams the door and walks out there. But I don't know. For me, that was helpful, and I'm thinking, you know, like, Lord, as we're waiting, there's all these little things around us. I would say read the Psalms or Lamentations. A lot of the story of the scripture is just people just shaking their fist, angry at God. God, why am I waiting for this? How long will I wait for this, Lord? How long? And then lastly, I would say, I love this verse out of 1 Peter. Peter goes back and he quotes Sarah. And he says, "Consider Sarah, our mother, how she obeyed her husband Abraham and called him Lord. And then you will be her daughters as long as you boldly," listen to this, "do what is right without fear and without anxiety." And I was just thinking about, as you wait in this process, to stand boldly without fear or anxiety, to be unafraid in this moment, right? To be unafraid. We'll all, at the end of it, we'll all come back and we'll all look back with joy and laughter, right? All the things we wait on. The story ends not with like, yeah, and then the Lord just didn't fulfill his promise. He just gave up on him. The Lord ends with Sarah saying, we're going to all laugh at this together, right? And so we will all look back if you're waiting on something. Again, I don't quite know what it is with you. If it could be a job, it could be a relationship. It could be just something that's frustrated you, that's dogged you, a character defect. I don't know what it is, but I know that when I've talked to people sitting in this room, there's people who are like, God, I feel like you've given me this word, but I've just been waiting and I've been waiting and I've been waiting. You've given me promise after promise, and I'm just ready to. And the story ends here with this little boy named Isaac. And we all look back and we say, yeah, God, you fulfilled your promises. You fulfilled your promises. So I hope there's some hope while you wait. Let me say a prayer. Again, Lord, I just felt like there's just folks in here that are waiting for something. Maybe it's only been 2 months, but maybe it's been a year. I know for me, there's things that I've been waiting on. It's been a while. And I want to speak hope to people this morning. Not to give up. We see the promises in your word. We see the promises spoken to us and spoken over us. So speak hope once again to us this morning. Come on, Lord. Come on, speak hope to my brothers and sisters that are waiting, that are hurting, that are struggling, that are just ready to give up. Don't let them give up. In the name of Christ, amen. Just a couple questions. What's one thing from what Molly shared that stood out to you? Question mark is missing. Do you find yourself blaming God like Sarah in 16:2 for what you are waiting for? Why is waiting on God's promises so dang hard? And then those kind of 5 points, whether it's that time does not operate proportionally, you're kind of standing in line, maybe reading the Psalms or the Lamentations, the unafraid, the laughter. Was there a point that resonated with you or something that thought that kind of will help sustain you? And then who's walking alongside you, spiritually nourishing you during this process? Is there somebody, as you're waiting, as you're kind of in this phase, is there somebody that's kind of nourishing you during this process? So just take, we're going to just do a quick discussion. And so just take like a minute or two and talk about one of these questions, and then we'll just have a little discussion, and then we'll do some music.